Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures, telling stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character for over 50 years. Details at texancultures.utsa.edu.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Tuesday issued an order banning landlords from evicting tenants who can no longer afford to pay rent due to a pandemic-related expense or hardship. The order starts tomorrow, runs through to the end of 2020. This could ensure that the nation's 40 million renters stay in their residences during this pandemic. But how this eviction ban works, it's not clear. It's not even a certainty that the CDC has the authority to do this, so expect some legal challenges from landlords who still have to pay all of their bills. Also, this renter protection could have an impact on the overall housing situation and echo through the real estate industry. So how do we know, what do we know about this CDC eviction ban, and how could this impact you? Call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're now joined by Aliza Durana, the Narrative Change Liaison with the Eviction Lab at Princeton University. Aliza, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Also with us, Marina Starleaf Riker, investigative reporter for the San Antonio Express News. Marina, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Lisa Alexander joins us, law professor and co-director of the Real Estate and Community Development Law Program at Texas A&M School of Law. Lisa, good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Aliza Durana, if you could tell me, what do you know about this eviction ban? First, if you're a person and you can't pay your rent, you're tapped out, it's gone, you have no money, and the rent's due right now, and you can't pay it, what do I do to make sure that I'm able to stay in my apartment?
Sure, it's a great question. And as you alluded to at the top of the show, you know, we're still assessing how this is gonna work in practice, but it does look like this CDC eviction moratorium is possibly gonna provide some very short-term relief to tenants in that in the next several weeks and months, barring a challenge by landlords, it could be that tenants will be able to stay in their unit as long as they qualify and as long as they follow several steps. So, what we know about this new eviction moratorium is that, there are income requirements. So families earning either less than $99,000 for an individual or $198,000 for a couple that you could then be protected. In addition to that, you also need to have exhausted available government assistance. So have you applied for rental assistance, for instance, in San Antonio or in other parts of Texas? Tenants also need to have demonstrated that they've been trying to pay rent. So what we're seeing crop up around the country right now is forms or other tools that can help tenants, declare to their landlords that, they have lost a job or lost income due to COVID-19, that they are going to attempt to receive protection under this new measure. But that being said, this moratorium is not providing rent relief. It does not provide families with money or other types of benefits to make ends meet. So this is really sort of the first of many steps that we need to take to support families in Texas and around the United States.
So renters must indicate on a declaration that they cannot afford their rent in full, and if they are evicted, that they would become homeless or forced to move in into housing that would be congregate and be dangerous with COVID-19. Renters must also be able to provide or prove that they made an effort to receive government assistance and that they could no longer afford rent. But so this is the very broad guidelines, but I mean, are there forms to fill out? Do we have to provide some documentation? Professor Lisa Alexander, what do we know about that?
There
trying to put together some forms that people should have to fill out to make this declaration. And you are supposed to give that declaration to your landlord, first. But it's unclear exactly how this will be implemented and how it will be enforced. What we did see with the previous federal legislation that was in place that provided a moratorium, that's the CARES Act, that expired in July. But during that time, advocates did find that there were still landlords that, even though they were covered under the CARES Act and therefore should not have evicted, were still pursuing those evictions. And so the question here is, even though this is a law that applies to millions of people across the United States, how will it be implemented? Will people be able to get the forms? Will landlords basically comply with what is required, and how will that be enforced? That all, I think, at this point is still unclear.
And Lisa Alexander, during the CARES Act, the only landlords that needed to follow that were ones that were dealing with Fannie Mae and were somehow covered by the federal government. This just seems more broad. And so I'm wondering what's the legal basis for that?
Yes, this is much more broad. Before, it was federally backed landlords who had federally backed mortgages or renters who were living in properties that were covered. And a lot of it was properties where you were dealing with HUD, where you were a Section 8 voucher, where you had a mortgage that was covered by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. This is broader than that, and is supposed to apply to anybody who meets the income requirements that were articulated earlier, $99,000 for an individual and $198,000 for a family. And it's supposed to apply broadly, not just to landlords that have federally backed mortgages. However, it's not clear, exactly how this will be implemented. And then there are still some people that, won't be covered. But it is at least a way to prevent people from being evicted during this time. But as was said earlier, it's not paired with rental assistance to individuals so that they can pay their mortgages in the future. And it's not paired with any forgiveness of rent or forgiveness of loans. So therefore, at the end of the period, which is December 31st of 2020, everyone will fully have to pay all of that back plus late fees.
I mean, late fees on paying your rent, I mean, those things add up quick. So that's not a trifle. Marina Starleaf Riker, investigative reporter for the San Antonio Express News. Have you been seeing that San Antonio is still having evictions?
Yeah, so what we've actually seen since the start of the pandemic, because of both local and state moratoriums and then the CARES Act protections, was that at least for the first few months in the pandemic, eviction filings are actually way down in comparison to previous years. I am still waiting on some more recent data, so I'm not exactly sure kind of what we've seen since the CARES Act has expired. But I think it's pretty safe to say that, we were expecting kind of this wave of evictions to happen after the CARES Act expired. But then now that we have this CDC order, everyone's wondering what this will mean. So I think the big questions that I'm hearing from folks is, we don't really know at what point in the eviction process this order kind of, or where that will really protect tenants. So does it protect them from getting a notice to vacate, or does it just protect them once they go to court? And I've heard differing opinions from housing policy experts and eviction court judges here in San Antonio.
So eviction court judges, you're talking about JPs?
Yes, exactly.
Justice of the Peaces. And then those things, orders are put out there by constables and deputy constables. We have seen over the past few months that there's been a freeze at the Justice of the Peace Courts, and then also the Texas Supreme Court has put a freeze on evictions. And now it's I don't know how that works. How do landlords make that work? I mean, they typically have a note out on the property, and they've got to pay that note. Marina, what have you been hearing from them?
Well, and I think that's the really big concern is, as everyone else has reiterated, this didn't come with rental assistance. So the big fear that everyone has is that this is just kind of kicking the can down the road. And if tenants aren't able to pay their rent within the next 4 months, what does that mean for landlords who can't pay their mortgage or can't pay their property tax or utilities, you name it? And then at the same time, the city of San Antonio had allocated $50 million. It was one of the largest funds in the country for rental and mortgage assistance. But that fund is close to running out. I just checked the numbers. There's only about $2.3 million left as of right now that hasn't been committed. So I think that is causing a lot of anxiety for landlords here who really don't know what this is going to mean.
And we don't know what this means for if you're a renter and this you take advantage of this program, you have at the end of the year, they say, okay, you owe $5,000-$6,000 for your back rent and fees and what have you. I don't have it. I didn't suddenly win the lottery. What does it mean for them? How does anyone expect it to be realistically paid back? Aliza Durana, what does it look like?
You know, it's really tough, actually. The other panelists have also discussed, you know, we knew that prior to the pandemic that, you know, 44% of American families would struggle to cover a $400 emergency expense. And that was when unemployment was under 5%. You know, now that so many families, both in Texas and beyond, have lost a job or income, you know, we are concerned that they are, you know, foregoing important essentials like food and medicine to pay the rent. And what we're actually seeing in our data, we actually have data from Houston specifically showing that, you know, since the pandemic started, most tenants who are being evicted amidst the pandemic are being evicted for relatively small amounts of money. So tenants have really been cobbling together whatever they can to pay whatever portion of the rent they are able. But often folks are being evicted for a $600 expense or $1,000 of rent, which is, you know, a lot of money to an individual family. But in terms of, you know, how meaningful, for instance, the unemployment insurance extension was under the CARES Act, you know, $600 is easily something that the federal government could come in and help provide families with in the future. So, you know, the CDC's moratorium is an important first step so that families are not, you know, forcibly removed from their homes amidst a pandemic and that we, you know, stem the spread of the virus. But at the same time, we must absolutely pair it with meaningful relief measures for families so that they can stay afloat until we emerge from the public health and economic crisis.
Previously, people were getting $600 checks per week from the government, and that was keeping them housed. It was keeping the economy flowing. Then those checks stopped flowing. We still don't know if there's going to be some sort of deal made on Washington about that. But Lisa Alexander, being able to get the check and to be able to pay your rent seemed like something that kind of worked better, didn't it?
Well, that's one of the major differences between this new Trump executive order eviction moratorium and the CARES Act. The CARES Act both provided individual direct payments to renters and owners, as well as provided a moratorium on being able to evict during a certain period of time. This new eviction moratorium just says that landlords can't evict, but it doesn't give any direct money to tenants or to owners. And more importantly, I think, it doesn't give money to landlords. So the CARES Act did have, under some small business provisions, some money that could go to, you know, landlords who, for example, had to pay their mortgage and weren't getting rent. Now there is no money currently under this eviction moratorium for landlords. And so, you know, they have still incentives to evict, you know, but they cannot. And then that means that the late fees and everything else will accrue for renters and then not become due till 2021. But then people have balloon payments.
where we're talking about the CDC eviction moratorium. What does that look like? How will that impact renters and landlords here in San Antonio and across the nation? If you had a question or a comment, our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Will this help keep you housed? Or if you're a landlord or you're wondering how are you going to make this work, we want to hear from you. Frank, hang on. I got you on the board. I'll get you on the air when we come back from the break. The number is 833-877-8255. Stay with us.
Oral history makes events of the past come alive.
This isn't just a dry fact in a textbook. This is a real human being talking about that event that affected them.
The history of the COVID-19 pandemic is still unfolding. The Voces Oral History Project is archiving stories of Latinos impacted by the pandemic. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the CDC evictions moratorium. How will that work here locally in San Antonio and across the nation? What does this mean for landlords? What does it mean for people who can't pay their rent? What does it mean for the housing market as well? If you can call in with a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Frank, you're on the air. Frank, go ahead.
Yes. Does this pertain to squatters? I have an eviction court date for possession only on September 16th. Would that court date still be, would that be canceled? Or, again, just want to know if this applies to squatters. No rent had never been paid. He's just taken over.
Frank, thank you for the call. Lisa Alexander, a law professor, co-director of the Real Estate and Community Development Law Program at Texas A&M School of Law.
Yeah, so this moratorium is for non-payment of rent for people who cannot pay their rent due to a COVID-19 related hardship, or if they didn't report any income to the federal government, or if they received a stimulus check this year. Landlords can still evict people for reasons other than COVID related non-payment of rent in some jurisdictions. So this doesn't protect all forms of eviction. If there were evictions that were already in play or in place, it may still not cover those that have already been in play or in place in between the CARES Act and when this takes effect on Friday.
So you're saying, Lisa, that landlords can still evict people for breaking things or just being a general nuisance, violating
for criminal activity, other things, and the order, the eviction kind of lays out some of the things that landlords can still evict people for, but for non-payment of rent due to a COVID hardship, that you should not be able to evict if the tenant meets the requirements.
Aliza Durana, does that create somewhat of a possible loophole for some landlords? Can they suddenly start accusing tenants of these other violations rather than not just paying their rent? At the Eviction Lab of Princeton University, is this something that you've seen?
Absolutely. At the Eviction Lab, we have seen that often things like nuisance orders are used to disproportionately evict both families with children and also families experiencing domestic violence. So, while this is an important measure, it will also be important to really identify, what loopholes do and don't exist and figure out strategies to, support our most vulnerable families, like those experiencing domestic violence, who absolutely need and deserve a place to live and deserve our support as well.
And Marina Starleaf Riker, when you're in work at the Express News, what are local officials telling you about how they read the CDC moratorium on evictions?
Yeah, so at this point, we have 4 Justice of the Peace courts here in San Antonio, and it appears that every judge is kind of trying to interpret it themselves. because as of right now, we haven't gotten further guidance from the CDC or from HUD or from state court officials that have really outlined exactly how this is to take effect in local courts. So I talked with one judge who said, we think that this is going to change a lot of our court proceedings. We may have to send out the declaration along with the eviction citation. I've talked to two judges who have said it's going to be kind of like business as usual. So it really just at this point, until we get further guidance from the state or from the feds, it really just depends on which JP court you end up having your case in.
And, well, that doesn't sound like a good way to do things. I mean, why is this not more standardized? Lisa Alexander at the A&M School of Law, dealing with real estate and community development, wouldn't you expect there to be more uniformity in how this is read and interpreted?
Well, that has been the problem, is that there has been a lot of differences between how states and counties and cities have handled this. The CARES Act provided some coverage to a limited number of people, and now this eviction moratorium is supposed to cover more people, but it also says that the eviction moratorium is not supposed to apply to states, localities, and tribal areas that have the same or greater protections. So if you live in a county or city that's doing more, then this, I guess, would not apply to you. So there's going to be differences throughout the state of Texas, for example, and throughout the nation in terms of how this is applied on the ground. And it's because, in some ways, this is an executive order, right? So there's still questions about whether or not this is a power that the federal government could have. And there hasn't been sort of an act by the federal government or Congress to clear this kind of all up at a national level. So you're going to have great differences between states and cities and localities, even though this eviction moratorium is supposed to apply nationwide. There's still going to be differences in how it's implemented.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Cynthia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Cynthia, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Great show, by the way. Thank you for having me. I do evictions. I represent Texas Evictions that operates out of Houston, Texas, and I currently have cases as of today. I had one earlier where the state or the city was willing to take the application and, work with the landlord, but the landlord wasn't willing to because of the fact that the case would have to be put off for a couple of weeks. And so they were afraid that they were going to go into that moratorium and end up not having judgment until January. Is that date firm as of Friday, the date that there was going, that was reported to start?
Tell me how your workload is.
I am seeing an average of maybe 2 to 3 evictions a week, where I normally saw maybe more like 10 a week. But that's just in one courtroom, because I've got, there's several JP courts. They're still continuing at a slow pace. I'm just not seeing them as often.
And does it seem like there's a pent-up demand? It's all back there, a dam's holding it back, and one day that dam's going to burst?
Yes, there is. On the notes that we have, that I get from my company, from the clients, meaning the landlords in this case, they are very anxious about it. They keep contacting us. Is the court open? Has my court been placed? And unfortunately, that places hesitation on the landlords working with the tenants because of the fear of future not being able to get them out, because it's going to continue. Our economic situation, unfortunately, is going to continue for a little bit. And so, they're facing, but then, on their side, they're not going to have any rent either. So it's kind of in their best interest to work with them. It just causes a lot of confusion.
Cynthia, thank you for the call. Lisa Durana with the Eviction Lab at Princeton University. We're hearing that everything starts tomorrow, that tomorrow you can present these declarations to your landlord, even though we're not sure if there's forms are going to be available or not for this. And that should keep you from being evicted. Is that what you understand?
Absolutely. And, we're seeing a lot of variation across states and even within states. I know that, both prior to this order and following this order, there will probably be a lot of diversity in terms of how you know, San Antonio versus Austin versus Houston handles this moving forward. I do know, you know, I've heard news from other states where judges have just halted all eviction proceedings in response to this CDC order. But we have seen, you know, in a place like Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you know, evictions have been piling up. There is this with a backlog and a high volume that is beyond what we have historically seen for a place like Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So it's going to be really critical in, you know, in the coming days and weeks to really suss out the details. But, you know, that being said, given the points that the caller raised, you know, we actually recently published the story of a tenant in San Antonio who had exhausted his rental assistance options. He had, you know, secured funding for his landlord. His landlord cashed the rental assistance check and is still suing him. So, you know, I think that as we work through the details of plans like this, you know, I really want to emphasize that, like, you know, we need to be seeking relief for tenants moving forward, and, you know, would absolutely welcome landlords joining in that you know, fight to you know, reach the federal government and find a solution to, you know, the material deprivation that so many families are facing right now.
And Marina Starleaf Riker, in your reporting at the San Antonio Express News, I mean, you're pointing out that if you get evicted for not paying your rent, depends on where you live in San Antonio, which district, which constable district or JP district you're in. But but the people who do get evicted, what kind of state are they finding themselves in? Where are they going? Are they just homeless on the street, or are they able to find another place? What generally happens?
So we did a lot of reporting on this prior to the pandemic. And I mean, typically what you saw are folks who end up doubling up with people. People sometimes end up living in their cars. They end up crashing in motel rooms, which, I mean, that it's clear in this order that this order does not apply if you're living in a motel room. We've seen folks end up at homeless shelters too. So, I mean, and that's why the CDC said in its order that it's doing this, is because living in a quote unquote congregate setting like a homeless shelter can make you more at risk of contracting the disease since you're in such close quarters. So that's kind of what we're seeing. And as I said earlier, like, we have seen a much lower volume of eviction cases than we normally would. And part of that may be just because the city of San Antonio has allocated, we've spent like $48 million almost on rental assistance since April.
And as you've pointed out, that money is running out. We're going to take a break. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Tell us about your situation. Does this moratorium come as good news because you could be out on the street, or are you wondering about it because you're a landlord and you have your own notes to pay? 833-877-8255. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the CDC's evictions moratorium. We're now joined by Gilbert Bracetta. He is the Vice President for Student Success at Palo Alto College. Gilbert Bracetta, welcome to The Source.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So what can you tell us from your viewpoint, from Palo Alto College, Vice President for Student Success, how this type of moratorium is impacting your students?
Well, from this sets and also local data sets that, you know, nationally almost half of community college students suffer from some kind of housing insecurity, which means anything from straight homelessness all the way to not being able to sleep in a safe place. And so at the community college, we experience that with our own population. We have about 33% of our student population that experiences this housing insecurity. And so that has allowed us to really sit back, look at our data, and think about how to drive important partnerships. And so we've been able to develop strong partnerships with the city of San Antonio, SAHA, and apply for grants that allow students who may be in this housing insecurity situation or not covered by the moratorium or whatever situation it may be in, to take advantage of housing vouchers. And so with the housing vouchers, we have students who go from being on the waiting list for public housing or to receive a voucher from 2 to 6 years to being on the list for 60 days and then being able to receive this assistance to help them through what they're going through because of what's taking place with the pandemic and with the health crisis.
And things are happening right now with the pandemic, the economic fallout, and these students that you deal with, what kind of state are they in? Are they trying to get back to school or just trying to tread water? Do they realize how vulnerable they are?
They are just trying to tread water. On campus, we have, you know, the last couple of years, we've asked the students to tell us their story and their voice. And so in the last 5 years, we've developed food pantries. We've developed clothes closets, assistance with applying for SNAP and WIC and public services. And so they come to us really at a point where they're the most vulnerable. And, you know, focusing on taking a quiz, taking a test, doing your homework, those are secondary to how am I going to feed my kids? How am I going to eat? How am I going to sleep at night in a safe place when I don't have a place to live? So, yes, they come to us in a state that is very, alarming for us to see our students going through this. And they're scared. And they're frankly, they're just scared.
Gilbert Bassetta is the Vice President for Student Success at Palo Alto College. Thank you for calling in and giving us an update on that. Gilbert, it was great talking with you. I'm going to swing over to another caller, and this is Betty. Betty, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question, I tuned in late, so I didn't hear anything about the relief for the landlord. I own 4 rental houses in San Antonio, Texas. Insurance is constantly increasing. Property taxes have gone up at least 25% to 40% on each of the properties this year. And if I can't collect my rent, how am I supposed to live if I depend on that income? It just creates a cycle for the landlord. So where's the relief for the landlord?
Have you spoken to anyone else, Betty? Have you reached out to?
No.
And you?
No. Right now, I keep my rent at a really good price, and I'm not going to raise it even though everything else is going up for me because I'm grateful that my tenants are paying. But what if this cycle continues, and what are we supposed to do? I haven't heard anything for landlords.
All right, Betty, thank you for the call.
I still have to make payments on the properties. I still have property taxes and insurance.
Lisa Alexander, law professor, co-director of the Real Estate and Community Development Law Program, Texas A&M School of Law. What would you tell Betty?
Well, Betty, that is one of the unfortunate things about this CDC eviction moratorium. It's simply a moratorium, and there is no money that is accompanying it. So there is no money for landlords to sort of bail them out as small businesses that own own properties, and there isn't any money to go to tenants to help them pay. So all this does is sort of freeze the ability to evict someone, but then all of the rent that they owe is going to accrue along with fees, and then you still have to pay your mortgage. I guess the thinking behind this is that hopefully Congress will at some point come together and do something that will provide assistance for landlords and for renters and owners, but that's not in this particular executive order. So I think at this point it's just trying to do workouts if possible with renters and working and trying to negotiate with your note holder or with your mortgage or the person who holds your mortgage to see if you can negotiate some kind of forbearance so that you don't have to make your payments because you're not receiving rent. I guess that's the best that I could say at this point.
Right, but it's also insurance and property taxes and whatever else. I mean, she's a landlord. She's still got to do maintenance on these properties, apparently.
Exactly, yeah.
So, Alisa Durana, if you could talk about at the Eviction Lab at Princeton University, I mean, this has an impact on the overall housing market. We have a housing, affordable housing shortage here in San Antonio. Lots of plans to kickstart more affordable housing, but who's going to build that if you can't guarantee that the people are going to pay their rent?
You know, it's a great question. And, you know, unfortunately, the pandemic hit in the midst of, you know, one of the worst housing crises, you know, we've seen in the last several decades. So, you know, COVID arrived when we were already witnessing almost three decades of rising rents and also stagnant wages, meaning that, you know, more and more of each family's budget is going towards rent, with little left over for, you know, savings, wealth building, or, you know, other important basic necessities. So, you know, of course, we do need to build more housing, but, you know, we've also, you know, lost a lot of important affordable and low-income housing since the last recession. And, you know, wages are still stagnant, rents are still rising. So I absolutely sort of hear and I'm concerned about the well-being of landlords, like our most recent caller. You know, at the same time, though, the Eviction Lab has done research, for instance, on, you know, where, how much profit is being made in rental housing. And in fact, you know, the greatest profits in rental housing are in our lowest income neighborhoods. The places where families are contributing over half of their income to rent, these are also places where it's more likely that a mortgage has already been paid off on a property. So as we think about how to, you know, address the needs of landlords and tenants moving forward, we absolutely need rent relief. We absolutely need to be thinking about constructing new low-income and affordable housing, but housing construction takes a long time. So in the meantime, you know, we can you know, speak about things like rental assistance, rent relief, and other forms of important assistance to our communities around the country.
Marina Starleaf-Riker, investigative reporter at the San Antonio Express News. Any idea how many people in San Antonio will be taking advantage of this CDC ban on evictions?
So I think that's a little tricky to know now, just because as of right now, I mean, if you're facing an eviction within the next couple days, you have to come up with this declaration yourself. So tenants need to be savvy enough to have the right language to print it off, to give it to their landlord, to know exactly what to do. But from what we can tell, the vast majority of renters, if they are experiencing a financial loss because of the pandemic or an extraordinary medical bill, would qualify for this. So we have about 270,000 renter households here in the city, and more than 90% of them make less than $100,000 a year. So that means the vast majority of folks would be able to provide this declaration and meet the income requirements if they do experience a pandemic-related loss.
You know, just that process of like, okay, you find the forms online, then you print it off, and then you take it to your landlord and fill it out and all this. Just getting to a printer to print something out is not something that is that easy for many, many people. That can be a barrier in and of itself. And then I'm wondering about tracking this. No, there's nothing about having to go to some sort of webpage with the CDC and saying you're doing it, or how are we able to track this information? We know if it's actually working, Lisa Alexander.
Well, I think we don't have a lot of data about that now because it's new, and there is an affidavit that's attached to the order that was made by President Trump, and there is some language that basically a renter could use, I guess, to bring to their landlord. But, you know, what happens, how easily you can do that, you have to print it out, you have to fill it out, whether if your eviction is in process and you present that tomorrow, that precludes you, it's not clear. And so how this is going to get implemented and also how the federal government is going to track and implement its requirements is also at this point unclear. And the broader point that some of the other panelists have made is that there was sort of people were very low income people in particular were severely cost burdened before COVID-19. And now they're even more cost burdened. And then also there's more people that are now experiencing some kind of housing insecurity. What's also true is that the only places where rent relief is coming right now at all is from states or localities or counties or cities. So, you know, in Texas, there was 11.3 million of rental assistance, but, you know, that is not enough to meet the demand. And so people are looking for ways to pay their rent. They're looking for rental assistance programs, but that's not really enough to meet the demand. And then it's unclear if this moratorium is not going to address that gap in need. And it's also unclear how this moratorium will be implemented at each level.
And then we don't know if there's going to be a legal challenge that just knocks us off the road. I want to thank all of our guests, Lisa Alexander at Texas A&M School of Law, Marina Starleaf Riker, investigative reporter for the San Antonio Express News, and Aliza Durana at the Eviction Lab at Princeton University. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by Ruben Garcia and Kathleen Creedon. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.